Everybody I'm seeing, I'm a recovered alcoholic. Grateful to be alive and sober and at a sacred place called Alcoholics Anonymous. And I thank all of you for still being here and not getting bored to tears with me and just having me and a chairperson here alone on a Tuesday night. So thank you for being here, and thank the group for allowing me to be here over the next few weeks to continue sharing my experience with this work. God separated me from alcohol June 23rd, 1988, and I'm very grateful for that, and so are a lot of other people who knew me when I was drinking. I'm very grateful to this fellowship that embraced me like a band-aid on an open wound when I got here in 1988. And in that fellowship, I found a program of recovery which has awakened my spirit that I'm forever grateful for. And in awakening of the spirit, I get an opportunity, I get to, not have to, but I get to go back into this fellowship and help others. It's what I've been moved to do, what my God has allowed me to do a day at a time, and I'm very grateful for that. Very grateful for being able to touch some of our history and speaking to old-timers and studying a lot of our literature to be in touch with what it was like way before I got here. There's a humble legacy that preceded my entrance into Alcoholics Anonymous, although when I got here in 1988, I thought AA started the day I walked in the door. And it's really important for me not just to know more, but to understand more, to understand what it is I belong to, because when I do, I become a better member. And Alcoholics Anonymous has saved my life, and the very least I could do is not only be an awake member, but also an informed member of this just wonderful, wonderful place called Alcoholics Anonymous. And I've been guilty over the years of being a little too soft with this work and watering it down when I was first sponsoring people because I wanted it for you more than you did for yourself. And I've been guilty of just ramming it down your throat because I wanted it more for you than you did for yourself. And really through a lot of trial and error and really working hard at my disciplines and going to my Heavenly Father and asking Him to demonstrate through me what He can do and make me an instrument for Him, that I do this work the way I do this work, the way I'm moved to do, and I'm still accused sometimes of being a little too aggressive with it and accused in some schools of being too soft with it. But I sleep night, and my spirit's been awakened, and I take who I sponsor with great love and respect when someone comes to me for help. And I usually get guys who are what my sponsor calls retreads in Alcoholics Anonymous. I've been trying to do this forever. And they show up at my door, and little by slowly, I watch them wake up and go back into the fellowship and pull someone else through. You want to see the love of God, you watch another drunk work with another alcoholic across from your kitchen table or, you know, on the phone we do it. Or you go into your parking lot after a meeting and see another drunk sitting with another drunk. Or the phone rings at like, you know, midnight or 1 o'clock in the morning or even 10 o'clock at night when you're about to pack it in for the night and you get that drunk who needs someone to walk them through a very dark and lonely night. And we're privileged and we get to do stuff like that. And that really is the love of God. And, you know, last week we were talking about step 4 and we got into step 5. And in meditation this week and even in reflection, it came to me rather than from me about, you know, what we do in step 5. I mean, like myself sitting down a few times with another alcoholic and unloading my 4th step to someone. And some very intimate and personal things and some things I was shameful of. And it went on and on and on. But sitting down with someone and we listen. And when you're listening to a 5th step, you know how uncomfortable that prospect is sitting in front of you because we were on the other side of the table. But I was thinking about what a precious gift that God has given us to sit there and be there for another alcoholic. A book told us, selfish and self-centeredness, that we think is the root of our troubles. And all I was consumed with was me and more of me. And God moves me to sit down like with you and sit with the prospect for a few hours or 8 hours or 10 hours, whatever the step takes to get through. And I said to myself, like, what a neat gift we've been given to do stuff like that. How exciting is that? that God will demonstrate through me and through you what he can do. And it's proven when we sit down and do step five with another alcoholic. And we have lots of mechanics to get to that place. But I follow the directions. But I don't worship the directions either. It's kind of like the language of the heart. We have the mechanics, but we can't worship them. It's about listening to the heart of someone, because God certainly hears mine. And he's going to allow me to sit with you and listen to you, and I'll sit with you and you'll listen to me. Ain't that great, what we do here? I mean, it's just incredible. I've had the opportunity to sit with several people as they heard my fourth step and step five. And I sat with just many, many who've come to me and said, can you hear my fifth step? I'm doing multiple fifth steps. Can you be the first round? And I sit with them and we walk. I shared last week about a gentleman who I was basically battling his ego. It seemed like half the night, and then somewhere in there I was moved to have him read just his fourth column to me, and he split right down the middle, and he was made new right in front of me. Now that stuff, I don't know if things like that that happen to me and to you happen out there, but I do know they happen in here based on my experiences and yours, and what a treat, what a good deal. We wrapped up last week, and I didn't have an opportunity because of time to ask for any questions, if there are any questions regarding step four and five. So before we get going, let's throw that out on the floor. Does anyone have any questions walking away from last week with regards to four or five? Okay. One of the things we hear lots of times, I was guilty of it, was writing out my fourth step and looking to do the perfect fourth step. And all the I's had to be dotted and the T's had to be crossed. And I was shooting for this perfect fourth step, because if it was anything less than perfect, I was going to get drunk, right? And my sponsor reminded me that God doesn't make too hard terms for those who seek him. I was certainly seeking this power. And he also told me, I've come to experience this with me and many others, that if I followed directions and I turned to this power to be searching, fearless, and moral, the spirit of my fourth step is perfect. I may need to go back and revisit it. And as I continue to wake up, new things will show up. But the spirit of the work is perfect. God is not imperfect, and he's inspired me, moved me to write. I've turned to him. I followed directions in his book. The spirit of what we do is perfect. In step five, we found out, it's kind of like we've been brought to a place, and where do we go out from here? In step six and seven, where we'll be shaped once again, and then go out and make amends, and then enter the world of the Spirit in ten. So it's about what we've done up until this point, and where we are about to go, where God's about to take us. Because this is, for a lot of us, where rubber hits the road. If it didn't in the fourth step, it certainly will be in the shaping in six and seven. We show up to six and seven with a spirit of willingness, a quiet, hopefully a spirit of humility, and we offer some things to God, and it's closed up with our seven-step prayer and an amen, which didn't appear in step three. My experience, and I'm getting moved here to talk a lot about my experience with 6, 7, 8, and 9 rather than just mechanics, because I think that's really a lot more vital than just telling you this is how you make amends according to my big book, and don't tell you about any of my experiences with it, because I'm the guy who's always talking about seek experience. But for me, step 6 and 7 was in fact a first step for my life every time I hit 6 and 7. As I got to 6 with all of this stuff, turning it to this power to be made new again. It was my first step for life every time I hit 6 and 7. I've had some interesting experiences in 6 and 7. In fact, a couple of them scared me to death, because I talked about it maybe our first couple of weeks about the spiritual awakening. The spiritual experience is about the removal. It's about emptying out, not filling up or gathering up. It's about complete removal, and that was done for me. And when it happened, I was scared to death. I had no idea what was going on. But I was to pass through the archway free again. Free again. And it was experienced with bliss again because of what this power does for us. We have some questions on the bottom of page 75. And I think we talked about, you know, not trying to sneak something through the archway, not keep something kind of under the table that the sponsor or no one else is going to know about. I'm going to cheat my way to this experience, and we really can't do that. So they throw some questions at us, like, are the stones properly in place? Have I skipped on the cement put into the foundation? Am I trying to shortcut the ingredients here? I was a blue-collar worker for a long time, a union guy. Trust me, I know about taking shortcuts and skipping on the cement. I don't want that type of foundation. What I want is what God's going to mold, because it'll stand forever. The way my God has been here before my heart took its first beat and will be here long after it takes its last beat. That's who I want making this archway. This God of mine, not me. So I sit with this and I consider, have I skipped on any of the ingredients? Am I trying to sneak something through the archway? And if I review those questions and the answer is, I haven't skipped, I haven't taken any shortcuts, I've reviewed the first five proposals, and I stand ready before my maker to answer these questions with my sponsor and move. And then I move into step six. They gave us 1 hour after the fifth step, and the first time I went through this work, I took an hour, and then I took 2 hours, and then I took a day, and that was a week, and then about a month, and about 2 months later, I hit a wall, and I had no idea what was going on. Because what I did was, and I talked about this, I got attached to feeling good. I felt wonderful. I finished my fifth step. I'm really part of Alcoholics Anonymous. I can go raise my hand with 2 6 guns on each hip saying, hey, I finished my fifth step. I'm like those old timers in the back, and I fold my arms and tell the new guy, when you do your fifth step, you'll see what happens. I thought I arrived. Ego showed up a lot quicker than I had planned on. And almost 2 months, 2 months and change, I start to become restless, irritable, and discontented. And I called up my sponsor, and I'll clean up the language a whole lot, but he reminded me about going to any lengths, about being searching, fearless, and moral, and about skipping on a cement, and he reminded me of the 1 hour, and a lot of earthy language. And I had to go revisit the first five proposals, and you know what? There were a couple things that I conveniently tucked in the back of the book. And there were other things that came to me that I had to be written out in column inventory. And I sat with this man again, and now I was ready. Because what I was experiencing was untreated alcoholism, and I hadn't even gone into my sixth proposal yet. Thank the good Lord, since I've gone to the work twice since that, I do not wait. The Spirit moves me, I go. My sponsor gives me direction, I move. And so I sat, and they have some questions on the top of page 76. Excuse me. And some of us may even experience some resistance right around now. It says if we can answer to our satisfaction, we then look at step six, and the answering to satisfaction were the questions on the previous page. It says we have emphasized willingness as being indispensable or absolutely required. Willingness, the spirit of willingness. If I'm not willing, I need to do a couple of things. Maybe go back and revisit my first step and touch my first step again and to remember how I was willing to go to any length like I had to do and what changed. And then pray to this power for a spirit of willingness to be made new, to be changed. It says, are we now ready to let God, not me, remove all things from us which we have admitted are objectionable? Can he now take them all? Everyone, well, he better. Because when I showed up to this, I said, Father, you take this from me, and he better take this stuff from me. Because those things that were left were the things that were going to take me back to a drink. That was my fourth column stuff. Those are the things that I considered objectionable. Defects of character, shortcomings, things I consider objectionable or interchangeable words, by the way. We can kind of play with those words. Those are all the things that are going to keep me blocked from the sunlight of the Spirit, and most of it showed up in my fourth column. That's the stuff that had to go. And so I show up to this tower with a spirit of willingness, and I tell you what my sponsor had me do all three times through the work. As I sat with him, there were things that came to the surface. There were many things that I was willing to have God, Father, you take them. I want no part of them. And there were certain things that I was attached to, that I was fearful of letting go, because when they go, what happens to me? And I found myself quickly attached to an outcome. And my outcome for me was in doubt. And I was shown from my own experience and from my sponsor's experience that God doesn't have a doubt about my future. It's perfect. I need to trust in that to be made new. But I was kind of like, well, if I let go of this, what to do? Great assignment. Things rose to the surface, and I listed the things that I considered objectionable, things that were repeated over and over and over again throughout my fourth column, across the board, resentment inventory, sex inventory, principles, institutions, over and over and over again. And a lot of them, you know, if they funneled into one word, were fear. They were fueled by fear. How many of my defects are fueled by fear? It touches about every aspect of our life, my book tells me, and it was true for me. I took a look at what kept surfacing, and I wrote it on paper, on one side of paper. And then I looked at what the opposites would be of every one of those defects, and I listed them. And what I did was I asked my God, in the spirit of willingness, to have these things taken from me, if it's your will. And if it's your will, I thanked him for the opposites. Whereas dishonest, Father, thank you for honesty. And so on and so forth. And that was kind of summed up. That was kind of put together with an affirmation of that action with my seven-step prayer. 6 and 7, there was some writing that I did, but it was a whole lot of reflection on what had been done and where I'm about to go. And I looked at things that were outstanding, and I wrote them on one side of paper and put the opposites on the other, and I offered them to God. And again, it wasn't about telling God, okay, you need to make me this way, but it was kind of like, Father, this was what was revealed to me, and I offer this up to you. For one reason, to be integrated with you to do your work. And our seven-step prayer is going to talk about that. Because it says, when ready to have God turn these things to our God, it says, we say something like this: my Creator, I am now willing right now that you should have all of me in body, mind, and spirit. It sounds like it parallels our third step prayer, doesn't it? Good and bad. It wasn't for me to decide what was good for me and what was bad for me. Things were revealed to me, and I offer that to God, but it wasn't the last word about it. I offered this stuff to God, but I'm turning everything, good and bad. I have found out what I think may be really good for me may not be so good for me. My God knows. And what I think may not be good for me, what is bad for me, may be just what I need. And so what I do in the spirit of humility is offer everything to this God. Back in Doctor's Opinion, it talked about recreating our life and this happening. And our God is going to do it for us, for me. It says, I pray that you now remove every single defect of character which stands in the way of my usefulness to you, God, and my fellows. It has very little or nothing to do with me. Doing this to make me a great AA. It's about doing this so I can be of service to God and my brothers and sisters in here and out there. That's what this deal is about. Being a servant. In serving, I lead. God allows me to lead in serving. I need to be a servant of God. That's what this prayer is reflecting on. Remove everything from me so I can serve you, Father, in all my affairs. It then tells me, grant me strength to go out from here, right from here, from where I stand, from where I kneel, to do your bidding. And that strength is to go now and clean up the wreckage of my past with a spirit of willingness in 8, and go fix it in 9. And somewhere in there, I will be rocketed once again and enter the world of the Spirit. And when I hit the world of the Spirit, I've kind of been awakened, and my job is now to grow an understanding and effectiveness, not to kick back and say, well, I had my awakening, now you go get yours. I go work with others and pass this on and demonstrate these principles in all my affairs, and the time will come, my God will reveal to me, Peter, it's time to do this once again, to rekindle this flame, this relationship. I went through the work the second time. The first time going through the work, I was kind of like, this puppy dog, man. I, you know, you tell me what to do and tell me what's next. Except I ran into that place at the end of my fifth step. The last time to the work, I sat with a new sponsor, who's been my sponsor since. And he told me at the beginning, are you ready to have your life turned upside down? And I thought maybe he needs to get a sponsor and go through the work. And he told me, my job is to get you as independent of me as quick as possible and dependent on God, to be integrated with that power, to have a revolution, a spiritual revolution. That was contrary to the way I was brought up in Alcoholics Anonymous, where it was tremendous dependence on a sponsor, which worked for a while. But then I had to grow up spiritually. We have to grow up spiritually and rely on that intuitiveness, that God guidance. Sure, I run things by my sponsor all the time, but there has to come a time and place where I'm awake enough to trust that and go with it. And that's one of the things my current sponsor, Mark H. from Texas, told me. And when he told me that, I says, oh man, I probably got him angry. He doesn't like me. He wants me independent of him as quick as possible. Oh boy, what do I do now? I talk funny because I'm from New York and he's from Texas. He don't like me. I ran all these things. What great value in that. Because when guys come to me now, I tell them the same thing because I've seen the value in it. Anyway, we began this work, and it was about looking at current inventory, where I was currently, in all three sides of the triangle, current work. And when I did my fourth step, to my surprise, things from the past, from childhood came up again. And I called my sponsor, says, what I do? What do I do with this? Old things came up. He says, keep writing. And I kept writing. I sat with him and another person in my fifth step, and I got some instructions after the hour with step six. And I followed the rest, and I thanked God from the bottom of my heart that I knew him better. And I sat for the hour. And I remember doing this because I wanted to experience exactly what my book tells me. My book, I put it on the shelf, like it says, it's to take it down from the shelf, and I took it down from the shelf, and I did this work. I get my sixth step instructions after my hour. And I sit, answer these questions, I call up my sponsor, I answer the questions with him, and then I sit, and I do the seven-step prayer. And then something happened to me, I'll never forget it. A void within appeared. Not that I saw the void, but the only way I can explain it. Words with this experience are going to do damage to the experience. But there was a void within me that showed up. And I remember being in this room where I do lots of prayer meditation, or I used to in my old home, and I remember feeling scared, very, very frightened. I was completely empty. And I was not thinking about a drink or anything, but I felt as if I'd never been to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous in my entire life, as if I never opened up the big book, as if I never spoke. It was like I was brand new dropped in Alcoholics Anonymous. Remember those first few days? I was scared to death. And that's where I was, and I had no idea what was going on. I did the seven-step prayer again, and I begged my Heavenly Father, please, whatever's going on, I'm in your care. What I found out was, remember I talked about getting things removed, or get stripped of everything? That's exactly what was happening. I didn't know it. And what came, I sat in a meditation, and what came out of that, I shared this once before here, was Father, save me from me. And that was made crystal clear to me that I was going to do me in faster than anyone on this planet. And that's what came out of that. I called my sponsor. I shared my experience with him. I says, Mark, here's what's going on. He says, sound like you're waking up to me. Don't talk the experience away. Just be with it. Yet the following day was a Sunday, and there were some things that happened in my personal life that every fiber in my being said, Pete, handle it this way, old behavior. Handle it this way. Put your hands on the steering wheel, take over. And I couldn't, as much as I wanted to. I couldn't. And it was difficult to sit with this new thing that was going on with me, but I couldn't go back to old behavior and handle it the way I wanted to. The day ended, and things fell, and I swear to you, things fell only the way God can make them fall into place. And I had not set the ball rolling. I didn't have troubles of my own making. It was divinely in order. It was perfect. And I slept wonderful that night. And that was an experience. I was getting squeezed. We get squeezed going through this archway. I was getting squeezed, and things were being removed from me, and it was uncomfortable. But I sat with it and was able to be with my God and trust, and I got to the other side, and Lord, great things came out of that. And that type of experience allows me, when I'm uncertain, to turn back to this power. We turn in order to go out. We turn in order to go out. If I don't turn in, I'll go without. I got to be careful. If I turn in too long, I better look out. Because the things that take me to God can be the very things that take me out there again if I start to worship methodology rather than this power. And I've been guilty of that. Turn in order to go out. A similar experience happened to me in 6 and 7 this last time going through the work. Same deal. The only difference was I knew somehow I did not doubt the outcome. I followed instructions. I was there to meet my Maker, to be made new, to be of service to Him. And as uncomfortable as it was, there was something inside saying, I will be okay. I'm being made new. And again, many things are removed from me. And my external world, I need an hour to tell you how many things from my external world were removed. Wasn't comfortable. Where I am right now is pretty neat. So we do our seventh step, and so maybe we should wait a year to do our eighth step and get our life together. What do you think? You know? Well, let's not rush into our ninth step because we may not be ready for it. May get you drunk. You know? Or we don't need to make amends to anyone. You're not drinking. That's amends to the planet, right? Mm-hmm. Well, we hear some of that, right? You know? I heard a gentleman say, wait at least 9 years before you go out and make amends. I figured he's doing the step a year deal. What I love about 8 and 9, it gives me an opportunity to go back and fix the damage I have caused and allows me to take responsibility for the damage I caused, and it really shoots to hell. All you have to do is not drink and go to meetings. Now, if that works for some people here tonight, I'm not here to split the room down the middle. But some of that same school of thought says that AA is a selfish program. It is not. All we do are told here to give back, to give away. My eight-step list all three times did not have me on it because the amend that was made to me was this gift that God has given me called sobriety and Alcoholics Anonymous in this work and my relationship with Him. I was taken care of a long time ago. God was on my list all three times. I wasn't. It says in step eight, it says, we need more action. I'd like you to underline more action. So we got to do some work for 1 hour in meditation and reflection. And then our book is back to moving us again. It says, without which we find that works, without faith, without works is dead. So I can claim faith with my lips, but without any action, without any demonstration of this, the words really fall short, don't they? And I'm more interested in someone's walking the walk than any words they're going to tell me. It says, let's look at steps 8 and 9. We have a list of all persons we had harmed and to whom we are willing to make amends. So the question is, do I have this list? If I did step 4, I should. And am I willing to make amends? It says, we made it when we took inventory. That was our fourth step. We subjected ourselves to a drastic self-appraisal. And if our fourth step wasn't drastic, maybe we need to take a look at that. It says, what do we do now? It says, now we go out to our fellows and repair. And I'd like you to underline a couple of things. It says, we go out to our fellows and repair the damage. I'd like you to underline that. Done in the past. We attempt to sweep away the debris, and I'd like you to circle the word debris, which has accumulated out of our effort to live on self-will and run the show ourselves. My eight-step list is a result of me living life run on self-will fueled by alcoholism. So I have this list taken from my fourth step of the amends that I have to go out and make. Direct amends, some of them were couldn't be direct. Step 9 is going to talk about that. But I have this list, and my job was to be willing to make amends to everyone on that list, on my eight-step list. Everyone on that list, I had to acquire a spirit of willingness. Step 9 was going to tell me, except when to do so, with either them or others. Step 9 was going to instruct me about how to go do this. I was going to get counsel from my sponsor and then sit with my God. They talked about going to any lens and how it works, and they're going to hit us with any lens in 8 and 9, the importance of it. Because it's real easy right about now to start to feel good, or even make a few amends, and rest on our laurels, and become a prey to comfortability, and get stuck on the second half of the first step, because our life is somewhat manageable now, and really I don't need to go to any lens, or I don't really need to hit everyone on that list, or they probably don't remember me anyway. It was a long time ago. It was only $10. And it goes on and on and on. Ego feeds us this stuff. My mind feeds me this stuff. But I can't deny what's on paper. It says, remember, it was agreed at the beginning we would go to any lengths for victory over alcohol. And I'd like you to skip over to page 77 for a moment, where it says, our real purpose is to fit ourselves to be of maximum service to God and the people about us, be of service to God and those around me. In order for me to be clear and present, awake to this moment, I need to go back and revisit my past in inventory and fix up my past with amends. It tells me very clearly what I leave behind. Two words, damage and debris. Now I expect them to clean it up because I'm going to Alcoholics Anonymous. You know what? That's selfish and arrogant. But my book instructs me, no, you left damage and debris. Now we go, it's going to tell me to take the bitten off teeth in some of these things. We go back and fix it and try to make right the wrongs we've caused. What great responsibility God gives us. And I'll tell you this about amends. There's not only financial restitution that we make, or sitting down and making amends for some of our behavior, but the thing I had to be in touch with was, I ripped people off emotionally. I ripped people off. I was a thief in the night. It was, trust me, on a lot of my amends, it was so much easier to sit down and say, here's the $50 I owe you, and sit and go through this whole presentation and not steal anymore. Or if I stole your jacket, I come back with a new jacket or the money for a new jacket, and I don't steal anymore. But what about the people I ripped off emotionally, and they still hurt for my injustice to them? I need to go sit with those people and sit with that and hear what they got to say. And it's happened to me. And it was uncomfortable, but it put me in touch with the damage that alcoholism allowed me to do, with no mercy for anyone. The most difficult amends I had to make on an emotional level for that type of ripping off was with my family. They were most difficult. I've had to see some rough characters to go make amends. I've had to go back to old girlfriends, which was awkward, and revisit old relationships. But the ones that were emotionally pulling on me was to sit with my dad and my brothers. And we'll get into that in a second. It says, it is seldom wise to approach an individual who still smarts from our injustice to him or her and announce that we have gone religious. In the prize ring, this would be called leading with the chin. We lay ourselves open to being branded fanatics or religious bores. We may kill a future opportunity to carry a beneficial message. And here's why. A man is sure to be impressed with the sincere desire to set right the wrong. Most people, this next sentence is so true, are going to be more interested in my demonstration than me just showing up and saying, I found the Lord. You know, forgive me, by the way. How do I be? A great piece of information my first sponsor gave me. When I'm going to make amends, if I have an appointment or I'm going to see someone, it isn't one of those things where you just happen to see someone on the other side of the street, hey, I owe them an amend, is the time right, and maybe I go see them. The appointments I had set up, those people are going to be looking at me as to what I'm about, and I better suit up and show up me the best copy of this big book they ever see, because I may be the only one they ever see. And I was always instructed to go make an amends and look like a recovered alcoholic, not like I just committed a felony. And I've experienced that many times. There have been amends. I was a longshoreman while I was working in my work clothes and dirty from work, and people would show up on the waterfront, and, you know, I didn't have time to go home and change and look presentable. Those same people also interested in the sincere desire for me to set right the wrong. This is what we do. Next paragraph, it says, we don't use this as an excuse for shying away from the subject of God when it will serve any good purpose. And I have not shied away from the subject of God. I've been moved in that direction through amends. We are willing to announce our convictions with tact and common sense. And, you know, I've heard people say, well, this is the script you follow. Hi, I'm Pete Marinelli. I'm from Alcoholics Anonymous. I offended you. That's what my list said. And part of my job is come back and make amends to you. And I've heard these approaches done to me. And, you know, are you really here to fix it? Or is this like a script you have prepared? And I'm in Alcoholics Anonymous. What about the civilians who hear this script? Now, I don't care how you do it, but the intent of what we're doing is really what counts. When someone has showed up to my doorstep to make amends, I was interested in what they were doing. The words really didn't matter. There was a gentleman I was sponsoring, and he came back to me. He went to make amends to someone out in Alcoholics Anonymous, and the guy turned him away. He said, because you didn't follow the directions in the big book. And the guy made every attempt to make something right. Worshipping methodology does no one good. It says how to approach the question of how to approach the man we hated will arise. It may be he has done us more harm than we have done him. I think a lot of us have one of these. I did. I had several, but one always stands out. I was living in this apartment in Brooklyn, this little studio apartment. I trashed the place. I brought like the Lower East Side into this place. And who lived upstairs from me was this landlord, his wife. She was pregnant. She had a little one already. They had a little one. He was working, going to school. And he was trying to make a life for his family. And there was me living downstairs, living like an alcoholic, dying every day, trashing the place and hating them for everything they represented. And there was a part of me that really wanted to be like that. I hated on Sunday afternoons if I was home and came to at 2 in the afternoon with my head on sideways. They had these little barbecues in the summer right outside my so I lived in the basement, my bedroom window. And I said, oh, my God, you know, what are they doing? And there's a part of me that says, I wish I can do that. But I knew I was dying. Anyway, I didn't pay rent on this guy. I trashed the place. I verbally abused him. And it was an ugly scene, and I got thrown out of there. And I hated him. Because all I could see was what he did to me. He threw me out. He didn't have any compassion for me. I borrowed money from this guy and didn't want to pay him back on top of all of this. And I failed to realize that he knew what I was and still gave me money. And I still hated this man. Well, I'm sitting with my ex-wife in a restaurant, and I go to the front of the restaurant, sit in the booth, and in the back of the restaurant is one of these family things that they have in restaurants, these banquets or whatever. And who's standing there is this landlord talking to a gentleman. And he's dead-eyeing me. He's eyeballing me from across the room. And he's talking to this guy, and I know he doesn't have any pleasantries about me. And I start to get the sweat coming off the forehead. I lose my appetite, and I tell her, I says, we need to leave. She says, how come? I'll talk to you later. I've got to get out of here. I was not yet free. I was still in bondage to my past, and I knew it. And so I call my sponsor, and he says, meet me at this meeting, the Ovington Group in Brooklyn. And we met outside, and I told him what happened. He says, wouldn't you be talking about you if you saw you on the other side of a restaurant? And so what I had to do was go back and do more inventory and find out why I still had these feelings about this man. And through inventory and prayer and meditation, this is what happened. Because I start praying for the willingness to go make this right. And here's the gift of step 9, because it tells us that sometimes the most difficult ones prove to be the most beneficial. Here's what happens. Here's what my God does for me. I'm getting, come out of prayer and meditation on a Sunday morning. I'll never forget it. And I start to get dressed. And I got this idea that I may be going to make amends, but it wasn't made clear to me until I left my apartment and I was dressed and I was going to this man's house. And I showed up at his house, and I rang the bell, and he looked at me. Actually, his wife was there, and he was behind, and he looked at me, and they invited me in. And I sat down with these people, and I shared what I was about and what I'm trying to do. And I didn't shy away from God, and I didn't shy away from Alcoholics Anonymous. And I made my amends, the best approach God allowed me to do. I made financial restitution in the city. They were very happy I wasn't living downstairs with them anymore. Right off the bat, they told me that. what happened was, it was amicable. I'm probably never going to go bowling with this guy. But I left in peace. And I sat with him like I do all amends, and I asked him, anything you need to tell me? It wasn't about saying, here's your $50, take care. Because maybe I'm not clear on certain things when I make these amends, and I need to hear it from them. And there have been a few amends where they let me know about it. But this one time, they were just so grateful that I was living this life and so happy for me. Shook their hands and I left. And what happened to me afterwards is really words will fall short, because I kind of remember walking back to my car with this, as if the fist of Gulliver reached down on my chest and ripped the last of the poison out, because I remember getting filled up with something that was indeed miraculous. I really don't remember walking back to my car. I was kind of lifted up off the sidewalk, and the next thing I know, I was back in my apartment. I don't know what happened between going to my car and getting back to my apartment. I just remembered on the way there, something happened. When God shows up, God shows up. Sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly, but when He shows up, you know it. I know it. We do. And it happened in this approach, like, incredibly. What happens if I never made that approach? Would I be drunk? Maybe. Would I be free? Definitely not. It's about getting free of my past, free of bondage. I had to go sit with an old girlfriend, and this was ugly. I came out of a blackout in downtown Brooklyn, and I was being very physically, I raised my hands to her is what I was doing. And I was not a nice person. I turned into an animal. That's where I was brought to. And I came out of a blackout, and I had my hands on her, hitting her. And what I was trying to do was rob money from her. And I had this woman was on my list, and I was uncomfortable about going to see her. And I would pray, Father, show me where to go, what to do, and sure as anything, I'm driving through Brooklyn, and there she is, sitting on the steps of a house. And I drove up, and I walked up to her, and she wanted no part of me. And I wanted to, in fact, she walked across the street, and I wanted to say, hey, I'm an AA, I'm a terrific guy now, you know, don't worry about it. She wanted no part of me, and I had to let that be. She still smarted for my injustice, and she was still afraid of me. What do I do with that type of amends? Well, I need to put something back into the universe. And I am so, I'm so grateful that I don't, and haven't since that time, treated women with any kind of physical or verbal abuse. I treat women with the love and respect that they're owed, like children of God. And I say that from the bottom of my heart. That was my way of putting it back into the universe. Treat women like children of God. And God has allowed me to do that. And that is truly a gift for me that I've been given. I don't like people who live like that. I don't like men who do that. And God took me from that and set me free. And I can say, well, it was only a one-time incident. Nonsense. That's ego thinking. It happened, and I'm responsible. I'm accountable for that stuff. That was a long time ago, and I invite you into my life, what this power has done for me. I had to sit with my family. I remember sitting with my grandparents, going there. I called up my grandmother, and I said, I need to talk to you about some things. And I went to the house, and I sat with her, and I started to make my approach. And she knew I was sober, and I go to this place that he doesn't drink anymore. I don't care what they're doing, he doesn't drink. And I start to make my approach, and there was some financial restitution. And I get a few words out, and my grandmother starts to cry. And I start to cry. And my grandfather's on the other side of the couch, he starts to cry, and he don't even understand English. And so the three of us, you know, doing his deal, and she started to interpret to him what I was saying to her and to him. And I remember this so clearly. He just kind of waved like it's really okay. But I was there. God allowed me to be there and fix up the damage I caused, because I caused them lots of damage. And I left there. It was healed. I sat with my brothers. I sat with my dad, who was by far the emotionally most difficult one for me. My dad, there was my mom, who suffered from this illness. And we watched her die from this illness. And then I show up. And he goes through it all over again with me. again. The same hospitals. The same ambulance coming. The same wondering, are they dead again? Lived it all over again. And I made many, many promises to this man that I'll never do this again, I swear to you. On my way into my fifth rehab, I swore to him. On my way into my first rehab, I swore to him. So how do I sit with this man? And I pray to my God, I said, Father, what do I do? What kind of words, what kind of credibility do I have? And I had to wait a while before I sat with my dad because he wanted to see me walk in this walk. And so I get my dad one day on the way to work, and I said, Dad, I need to talk to you about some stuff. And my dad, being my dad, said, let's go. Anything. And I sit down with him, and I go to make this approach, my amends with him. And I got just a few sentences out, and he stopped me. In fact, he didn't even want part of the financial restitution that I owed him. I was about to make payments. And he stopped me, and what he told me were words I will hold on to for the rest of my life, because if it wasn't for the courage, strength, and direction God gave him to stay with me, keep me alive long enough till I got here, you have a different speaker doing this workshop. What he told me was all I ever wanted was my son back, and I got him. That's all he ever wanted. I thought my dad wanted to make, like, you know, build the Empire State Building or something, or be, you know, a nuclear scientist or a politician, just something great. All my father ever wanted me was to live a good life. And in that amends, something, our roots grasp new soil. We're put on different footing, different ground. And we commence shoulder to shoulder from that day. Our relationship's been made new. What a neat deal that happens in Alcoholics Anonymous, what God does for us. Indeed, the miraculous. Making amends, I sat with people, old employers, where I had to make financial restitution. And there were times where I couldn't show up with a satchel full of money, but I arranged the best deal possible. Credit card companies arranged the best deal possible. People that I knew arranged the best deal possible. I told them what it was about. I didn't shy. I didn't dodge my creditors. I suited up and showed up and said, here's where I'm at. And I go to God. Many, many amends. I had to seek counsel with my sponsor. Sat with my kid brothers about the abandonment. I sat with them again the second time going through this work because there were things that were uncovered in going through this work again that I need to sit with my brothers again. And hear from them. Each time I said, what do you need to tell me? And then the question, what can I do to make it right? If you could think of something, if not now, later, what I can do to make this right, to fix this. There have been times when I've made amends and my mind says, you don't need to go there. They don't remember you. I was on the waterfront. My first point to the work, I made approach, direct approach is over 200. That's not the letters I had to write and the things I put back into the universe through acts of charity and good deeds and acting the Good Samaritan every day. But over 200 direct approaches, and lots of them were truck drivers who I treated terribly and did a lot of legal things for the price of a drink. And there was this one gentleman who I verbally abused and ripped him off, and I hadn't seen him for quite some time. And this guy was about 6'12", a monster of a man. And he shows up. And he hadn't hit my peer in quite some time. My peer, there's ego for you, where I work, in quite some time. And he shows up, and he was a loud man, really nice man, but you knew when he showed up. And I said, oh boy, there he is, and I need to make amends. My mind says, God, that's so long ago, Pete, really, don't even bother. There's too many people around anyway, you're going to make a fool of yourself. This is what my mind's telling me, right? What ego's fueling. Well, I get some prayer time. And I asked my Heavenly Father for courage, strength, and direction and willingness to go do this. And I approached this man, and I'll tell you something, he gave me a bear hug. And he was so happy that I remembered. We give people the due respect that they're owed. And he remembered the abuse I caused him. Here's a guy who could have just knocked my lights out, really. And was just so grateful for what I was doing. That my dad seemed happier now. He was happy for my dad. It made things right. there was one gentleman on the waterfront. There are a lot of guys with nicknames, and there was one gentleman, I knew him only as Vinny Hilo. So I prayed to God, Father, I can't find Vinny Hilo, and God must be going, Vinny Hilo, I don't have any children named Vinny Hilo. But that's how I knew him. And I hit lots of approaches that way, like I only knew nicknames. And I'm downtown Brooklyn coming out of a lawyer's office or something, and who's standing across the street is Vinny Hilo outside of OTB. And it was a Friday morning, it was raining, and I had a friend waiting for me in the car, and she said, Joe, I'll be back in 10 minutes, I need to do this. And I go across the street, I make my approach to this man, and he remembered me. And he was very clear when I said, anything you need to tell him, I paid him back his money, and you know, 20 bucks 5 years ago, 10 years ago, is worth maybe 30 now. And that's how I make my restitution. And he let me know, in no uncertain terms, how he felt ripped off by me and took advantage of me, and only because he liked my dad so much, he kind of let it die. But he let me know how awful he felt about it. And he said a couple of other things to me, and I woke up to the fact of how important this was. And I asked him anything to do to make it right, and he says, don't borrow money off me anymore. What do? I thanked him for his time, and I left. I think he was really grateful because OTB was about to open, and I just gave him some money. But, you know, sometimes they go that way. What do I do with God? God was on my list. How do I make amends to God? God's probably sitting back saying, you don't need to do this. Forgiven. Forgiven. As soon as I do something that I don't think God wants me to do, I'm immediately forgiven. God doesn't make two hot turns, but I need to fix right. And what I've done is put things back into the universe with Mother Earth, with people, my brothers and sisters, this universe, acts of charity. And I give God, and this is just comes from the heart, credit for everything I do and say and be. It's because of Him. And I worship my God. I sit in my meditations. I visit my house of worship. I do all the things that I think my God would want me to do. Bottom of page 77. It says, about that man we hated, and we can use this for all our approaches, under no condition do we criticize such a person or argue. Simply, we tell him we will never get over drinking until we have done our utmost to straighten out the past. We are there to sweep off our side of the street. I like it underlined this, realizing that nothing worthwhile can be accomplished until we do so. Never trying to tell him what he should do. His faults are not discussed. We stick to our own. There may be some people we approach who maybe didn't do nice things to us, or maybe give us some feelings on how they thought about what we did. My job is not to sit there and say, yeah, but if you didn't do this, I wouldn't have done that. Or if you weren't such a nag, or you know, if you weren't so cheap, or whatever it may be. My job is to sit and be and listen. If our manner is calm, frank, and open, we will be gratified with the result. And that's a promise. In 9 cases out of 10, the unexpected happens. Sometimes the man we are calling upon admits his own faults, so refuses to be a stand, melting away in an hour. Rarely do we fail to make satisfactory progress. Our former enemies sometimes praise what we're doing and wish us well. Occasionally they will offer assistance. It should not matter, however, if someone does throw us out of his office. We have made our demonstration, done our part, it's water over the dam. We have people on a list, and I make this list of where I think they are. What about the people I have no clue where they are? What do I do with that stuff? Well, it's easy for someone to say, well, how are you going to find this if I'm trying to find a needle in the haystack? Or is what happened to my sponsor, someone told him, that's like trying to, you know, drop a bucket of feathers off the Empire State Building and trying to locate every one. And my sponsor's response to him was, if God made the feathers, he'll take me to every feather. Nothing is impossible in God's world. And there may be people on my list that I think, based on my short vision, short-sightedness, that's a word, that I can never find these people. And here I am looking to fix and do God's work and fix my past. Why would God deny me that? I don't just show up for someone and make amends. My experience has been just to make amends so I can go back to my home group, put another notch on my belt saying, hey, I made another amends. Because there may be some people at home or are not ready to see me. Timing is critical. And with God, the timing is perfect. There have been people I wanted to go, I should go, and something said, wait. Not yet, like former employers. Wanted to go see an old boss and something said, wait. Wanted to go see an old boss and something said, wait. And I had to wait. And I went there. And here's why I had to wait. Because I was about to go in there and share about me ripping him off, ripping the company off, not realizing that I would implicate a lot of other people. So I had no right to save my own skin. Our book talks about that at someone else's expense. And my old line of work would have some rough characters. And trust me, the consequences would have been great if I would have dragged four or five other guys into my jackpot. That's why I had to wait. And so I had to make right the best way God allowed me to without implicating other people. I can't do that stuff. It's my inventory, not theirs. Not for me to judge if they were right or wrong. I made wrong. I need to fix this and not bring them in. Another great lesson I learned. We're about 10 after 9, and I don't want to shortchange anyone of questions. We'll pick this up again, God willing, next week, because there's a whole lot to talk about amendments that we didn't get into. What I could do is throw it out for some questions or comments towards all of you. And again, thank you for being here and keeping me sober. I guess the question I would ask you was more harm caused than making the amends. Okay. So then I guess it wasn't self.
Hey, Trev.
Are you clear on the harms caused first? I want to be clear on where you think you've caused damage. What I had to do with that kind of emotional, ripping people off emotionally, not being there, saying I was going to be there and never show up, embarrassing people, arrogant towards them, angry towards them, all of that stuff. My job was to be part of, not to be a leader, not to drag behind, but be part of a solution. The question I always ask myself was, what would God want me to do here? Instead of taking away, what I've been moved to do is support. Family members have sat with me in counsel about certain things. My job now is to be there, and I can be a half hour away from my home group because there's a family member who needs to talk to me. I have two younger brothers who have sat with me many, many times when I had other plans. I was going to a meeting, going to a ball game, and I put that on hold because now my job was to be there. And it's in the demonstrating of these principles. Our book says the first word is homes, occupations, and affairs. I demonstrate these principles in my home. I take this stuff home. A great lesson I learned was walking this walk, getting moved to walk this walk with my dad. He gave me the keys to his car one time and a pocket full of money to go do something for him, go buy something for him. And I said to myself, like 6 months ago, this would have entered my mind, but it wouldn't have entered his mind to do this. And so on that, he told me to be back at a certain time. I did the chores he asked me to do. I brought his car back without any scratches. And I did the purchase he wanted me to, and I got back on time. What that set up was he did not have to worry about trusting me with anything anymore. I was there. So we support, we give. And we put, remember, it says less and less ourselves and more others. Over on page 63. Well, rubber hits the road now. A demonstration over time, my experience has been, will convince others of how we're living. We need to be there. We get to the 11th step. I can talk about an experience with my mom. It's always difficult. I come from a school where there's something that goes on after here, and I go to the place, if I know where they are, with the letter, as if I was sitting, because their spirit is not dead. And I sit with them, and I read a letter to them. And I sit in reflection, I sit in meditation, and I see what God has for me in the rest of my affairs. Any harm that caused that person, I don't cause anymore to other people. There's a way to make it right. There's a way to make everything right. Wrote letters and go to a gravesite and sit and be. Incredible experience. We can make amends at a gravesite. I'm sorry? Yeah, I kept it. I don't burn anything up. I know people burn it up and send it up. I keep it. Yeah, I have actually three of them. And that's just for me. Speaking about, I don't want to be morbid here, but going to a tombstone, a graveyard with a tombstone, my sponsor told me something, knocked me off my chair. He asked me a question. He says, Peter, what are you doing about the dash? I said, what do you mean, what dash? He said, what are you doing about the dash? I said, what's a dash? He said, if you go to a graveyard and you look at a tombstone, there's a date we come into this world and a day we go home to the Lord. And right in the middle is a little two-inch dash. That's your life. What are you doing about it? And he asked him all the time, what are you doing with the dash? How are you doing? I work with words like turn. Turn into this power. Turn to this power for direction. Turn to this power, for courage, whatever. Turn in. No, into this, the great reality deep down within. And I turn in prayer. Father, guide me. In order for me to go out there. If I don't turn in, I will go without this power. I'm using self-reliance. I need to always turn to this power. Turn all things into the Father of life presides over soul. All things. I turn to my God for everything. Father, guide me. Father, guide me. Walking through my day. Father, what do I do here? Always turning in the glass. If I don't turn in, I'll go without this power. And the last thing I said was, and we'll talk about that in 11, is, but if I go in too long, I better look out. And what I mean by that is, we start to worship. We think we're worshiping God, and really what we are is just full of ourselves again. Case in point, a friend of mine is in meditation. Right? And he's sitting in meditation, and he hears his wife calling him. The dear friend of mine says, yeah, Peter, I hear my wife calling me the first time, the second time, the third time, and he barks back to her, God damn it, don't you know I'm meditating? You see, if we go in too long, we better look out. What is that about? You stop the practice because a family member, we need to be there, needs support. God's hip. God knows what we're doing, demonstrating these principles. I'll finish my meditation later. The wife is carrying it, the husband's carrying a big bundle of clothes or something, so you go help your wife or your husband with a kid scrape his knee. You go do that stuff. We go back to our place and revisit with our God. Mm-hmm. That's living this, by the way. Okay? One more? Yes? I didn't have me on that list at all. But on that, as I've gone through this work, if I had, just for argument's sake, there were 10 people on the list, I need to know that more will probably appear as I wake up. So even though there's 10 people on my list, there's going to be more showing up. But I am not on the list. Look what I've been given. I make amends to me. How do I do that? I'm here. Say the last part again.
Where it is the kind of thing where really thinking it here as a speaking to yourself. At that point, do you, try and do that in some way? I think you're speaking of your experience, not necessarily for everybody.
I damaged myself. I wound up in a gutter at the end. Lucky I'm alive and didn't walk away with any kind of illnesses or diseases and things. It was really a gut level. And I did not obviously take care of myself. I'm not on that list. Everyone else on this planet is who came in contact with me, including my God. What I've been moved to do as I wake up, and currently still do, is try to take really good care of myself. Like visiting a doctor or going to a dentist. And exercising, and I don't always stick to it, but I try to eat right. And most important, take care of my internal condition, because that's forever. And so that's what I've been moved to do. If you want to call that an amends to yourself, so be it. It's just what I've been moved to do as I woke up. Okay? Body, mind, and spirit. We're out of time. Thanks.